There have been recent developments regarding Operation Kino.
Hello and welcome to Operation Kino, episode 133, the review segment for Friday, October 4th, 2013. Today, all four of us are here because we've all seen Gravity.
Yay, bingo.
Yeah. Everyone fill out your bingo cards. Maybe we'll just let this be a Dave monologue to make up for all the movies he hasn't seen. Gravity, it's made by Alfonso Cuarón, who made Children of Men most recently. It stars Sandra Bullock and George Clooney as astronauts lost in space. But not like the TV show Lost in Space, but like serious, scary.
Lost in Space.
Well, they're not really lost in space. They always know
where.
But
sure, they can see Earth. They definitely know where.
They know where they are.
There's definitely a moment in that film where I was like, you guys, Earth is right there. Just go. Just get there. Which
some of them are momentarily lost in space.
Well,
in a very micro sense.
Yeah, turned around. That is very much more accurate.
I think we should do our best not to get too much into spoilers, although it's kind of hard to spoil this movie because it is exactly what it promises.
Yeah, what in God's name are you talking about in terms of spoilers
here? I mean, it's about whether or not these people survive their crash in space, so we don't want to give that away exactly. That's... But anyway, it is just two people. It's Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. If you've heard about this movie, you've probably heard about the visuals of this movie. It is set in orbit. I don't really know how they filmed this movie. I mean, I kind of know intellectually, but watching it is completely stunning with the way that it looks. And I take Alfonso Cuarón at his word that this is a thriller. And if you want to assign, you know, higher ambitions to it, there is an emotional story. There's some conversation about religion, which Patches might get into later. But as a thriller, this movie completely floored me, basically.
Thrillers are allowed to have themes. I mean, it's still a thriller, even with
Let's not excuse your theme just by saying they're allowed to have themes, Patches.
Fair enough.
Whatever theme Patches wants them to have is what they're allowed to have. I was blown away by this movie, as a lot of people were. And Patches, I know you were too, so let's start with you to keep the positivity going for right now.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was really taken by this. I think I experienced actual vertigo watching this movie, and I'm anxious.
I did, in fact. That is offensive to people who actually suffer from vertigo.
Well, you suffer from vertigo when you wake up in the middle of the night because you're on too much... you're all drugged up, so that's not anyone's problem. I lost my mind over this movie. Partially, I mean, the visuals are stunning, and Cuarón shoots the hell out of it with these long, elegant shots that I guess are strung together with the magic of CG, but who can really tell when every part of it is likely fabricated except the actors and maybe some of the sets. But it certainly doesn't look like it, or at any moment was I pulled out by CG effects or something. And this is a very much a get from point A to B movie, as you described, Katie. And, despite what David will tell you,
don't you put words in my mouth.
Again, this was taking my breath away the whole time because it really never lets up. One thing can go wrong, and when you're in space, you're screwed. And that's kind of the major thrust of this movie, about how Sandra Bullock can, get from one place to another in this extravagant, string of mishaps.
I want to hear from Dave before David jumps in on this.
I'm closer to Patches than where we're assuming David is.
I read Twitter. I know where David is.
Why am I even here?
Look at you.
I really enjoyed it as a thriller. I kind of wish there was something a little bit more thematically there.
Oh, but there is, Dave.
I don't agree with that. I have talked to you about that, and you'll get there.
I will.
But I especially liked it. I'm a big fan of 3D movies being in space because black can have infinite distance. Therefore, you have a lot more things to play around and how far and close it is to you in terms of the distance of the screen. I think this is shot really well. I think at some point the tension gets cut for me by the sudden realization that we are actually supposed to assume there's a camera in space. There's a couple of moments where very prominently Alfonso Cuarón wants you to be aware that there's a camera shooting Sandra Bullock in space.
Well, this is not like a found footage movie. Are you referencing when he goes through windows or when like droplets of water hit the camera or something?
I'm referencing those things, yes, which is fine, but it's...
He did that in Prisoners of Azkaban as well.
There's a difference between a beautiful shot that I'm enjoying for its technicality and the fact that it's, you know, sort of simulating the directionless of space and suddenly doing something to be like, oh, hey, aren't I good moving the camera around so you can't tell how I cut? And I feel like the gravity at some points crosses that line and sort of becomes a little bit too flashy with its own brilliance.
Wow, you think he's gloating?
I think it's a little bit of gloating. There's no reason for a drop of moisture to land on the camera lens in the middle of a... I almost cussed. Oh, I can cuss on this podcast. In the middle of a fucking scene where, you know, I'm concerned for this woman's life. And then I also think that the 3D sort of invalidates the inherent claustrophobia of space. But that's neither here nor there. I think that some of the technical bells and whistles on gravity work against it and stops it from being a very pure thriller. But I did also sweat from the palms during a lot of it, just out of pure nervousness.
All right, David, take us home on this. Oh,
start the
descent.
The descent.
Towards Earth.
I find myself agreeing with a lot of what Dave said. I think that this movie, it's an extraordinary experience in some respects. Certainly in the first 45 minutes or so, the visuals are very complicated, my reaction to them. I mean, it goes back to some of the things that I find most interesting about cinema, about what we can believe with our eyes and what we know to be fake and, you know, et cetera. And I think, you know, it goes back to my fascination with how Herzog employed sort of incredible things on screen and Net for Fake and all that jazz. But the movie is so obviously fake that I wonder, well, you know, the verisimilitude is incredible because you're like, how did they film that? And this was my first reaction to seeing the movie, was just how. But that question of how applies to less positive things about the experience as well, such as how did they greenlight the screenplay and how is nepotism so rampant that Alfonso Cuarón's son got a job writing this thing? And I think this, you know, I think that the effects are impressive, but my mind, it's hard for me to engage because they're so real in such in a situation that I know it to be impossible that it's actually more difficult for me because that lack of reality.
Why is the situation so impossible?
He's talking about the uncanny valley of cinematography.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Because
oh.
I know that they can't film this in space. I know that Sandra Bullock is not in space. My mind knows this. And the film, while it's not impossible for me to put that aside, and in certain moments, in certain sequences, I was absolutely enraptured in what I was seeing. But you really have to be on your game in your modes of presentation to fool me in that moment. Not that I'm so smart, but just because I see things in a certain way that I if I know that exactly that dialogue that we were just going over of knowing it's fake and my mind trying to convince me that it's real is very disengaging for me. And I think that the major fuck up for this movie can be besides the screenplay, which is eventually atrocious and completely dunderheaded and hollow, despite what Patches will tell you.
I would like to hear more
it's like
about
someone
that.
Moved by a Hallmark card.
What?
It's the use of sound. I mean, this movie starts off with a very silly title card that says something that I thought was an embarrassment to begin with and immediately put me in sort of a sour frame of mind. It was like, in space, no one can hear you scream, whatever the fuck it
says.
It definitely doesn't say that.
It's like in space, life is impossible in space. And like, there is no sound. It says explicitly what, you know, most people I would think already know, that there's no space in sound. There's no sound in space. And then immediately it's like, well, unless we're talking about an incredibly generic and overbearing score, because there's that in space. You can hear that just fine. And also there are sound effects whenever it seems convenient for them to be there. And I thought on a technical level there that the movie would have worked so much better on mute. And that includes both the dialogue and the score, which is generic, and the sound effects. And the movie is at its most effective when there's madness happening behind Sandra Bullock and you can see it and you reconcile, but you can't hear it because he's actually decided to take the sound out for those portions. And you can, your brain sort of boggles at reconciling the cataclysmic, you know, mechanical nightmare
the shards
behind
of
her,
the International
right,
Space Station.
With the silence that is there. And I think that is what was so viscerally gripping for me, was not the Hollywoodisms that the typical sound work that you see elsewhere. And I think it all boils down to, for me, and we'll talk about the third act, I'll stop talking, I'll let Patches handle the third act, and then I'll counter. But, you know, I think that it's in the fact that this movie – and I don't want to hold this against the movie. I don't want to hold its potential against the experience. But I am left with no choice because of how underwhelming I ultimately found the experience. Is that this movie had the potential to be something really special. It had the potential to, you know, they're spending so much money on incredible feat, innovative feat visually and technologically, and it ends up being such a regressive movie. Everything about it is so conventional, from the fact that it's George Clooney's first day on the last day on the job, to Sandra Bullock being a very simple grieving mother, you know, with really no more nuance to that, and whatever nuance she does have is eliminated by a third act twist, to the way they use sound and everything else. I was like, why is something that by definition should be something I've never seen before feel so fucking familiar?
Because it has to be familiar in order for it to really push it.
And that completely gutted the tension for me. I thought that this, as you know, I thought this was like very relaxing compared to something like Captain Phillips, which is imbued with a greater reality. Anyway, I just like the tension element throws me because I was never really tense in what I was seeing.
Before Pasha jumps in with his talk about the story, I do want to agree with you slightly on the screenplay. I think there are moments of dialogue in this that feel pretty awful. I mean, there's one specific scene late in the film that I don't really want to talk about in detail, but it's one of the longer dialogue scenes in the movie, and it's not very well written at all. There, I mean, most of the times that people said things out loud, I kind of wish it had remained unsaid. But I don't really mind the tropes of the his last day on the job and she's a new person in space. I don't mind the idea that it's working within an action movie framework. You've got kind of these broad strokes of character, because you need kind of the broadest strokes you can get before you get into what the movie is really about, which is kind of straight up survival.
Right. How do we immediately know these people?
And yeah, I don't.
And
I don't.
It's history of movies, and it's history of characters, and it's history of story informing those moments of broad characterization.
But why?
That allows us
why
to
do you
them.
Have to have those characterizations? I don't understand. If you can make a movie about people,
because the movie is about something more than just getting from point A to point B.
It is not. The movie is about satisfying exactly what you're talking about, those traditional expectations of what a character has to be. But here's a movie that visually, at least ostensibly, is shaking things up for you and saying it doesn't have to be that way. We can make impossible things real on a movie screen. But they're completely shackled by the most boring, familiar, and frankly inhuman, because of how stock they are, and they have none of the complexities that human life inherently brings with it, characters. And if the drama is so false, it exposes the unreality of the experience for me in a way that the entire thing sort of falls apart, and you're left with the greatest sharper image tech demo ever made.
I think arguing that the whole thing falls apart based on that is kind of wishing for it to fall apart. I think it's incredibly easy to look past flaws in...
It should be more.
Well, Katie, but my approach to it is that it doesn't work. Why not? And so, I first am sitting there as a reaction saying, this movie isn't working for me. Why not? Why isn't that happening?
Fair.
And I can...
That is definitely a question that you should ask yourself. That. I think your opinion is wrong because I enjoyed myself. And that, obviously, that's not a valid way to talk about it, but I just feel like what feels slightly hollow in the story, in like the very background elements of the characters and the stuff in the story that doesn't really affect what's actually happening on
screen.
Listen,
I don't oversell it. I enjoyed watching this movie except for the last 20 minutes, which I did not enjoy. I laughed out loud at the last shot, but I did really enjoy.
Wow, you're that guy?
Yeah, I did enjoy watching this movie. I have recommended to anyone who's talked to me that they see this movie and on the biggest screen they can, because I think it's a valuable screen experience to have. I'm just trying to reconcile myself with it as as an experience beyond the experience, as a thing. And I think that it's very open to criticism in that vein. But as an experience, as something, you know, you're going to go and pay $20 for and enjoy for 88 minutes or 93 minutes or whatever it is, you can certainly do a lot worse.
It's interesting to hear you guys.
Tell us why the story is better than David says.
Well, it's just interesting to hear that the screenplay rubbed everyone so wrong. I mean, I enjoyed the playful banter. I liked the broad characterizations because I just got to know these people immediately. And while this movie's not going to spend its time peering into every facet of their being and shaping them as three-dimensional worldly characters that I understand where they came from and where they're going and who they are. I know them in that immediate moment. And I think that that's what this movie is all about. It's about immediacy and human reaction. We're all the same on some level. And that's what this movie is about, as opposed to being real individuals. And I think that's okay. I like the playful banter between Sandra Bullock and George Clooney and kind of, you know, using some down moments from the action to just talk about, hey, I'm back home, and oh, I can relate to that. Oh, now another problem has occurred. Those initial moments, I was really just as energized by as, you know, we got to escape from the ISS. And hearing that everyone was kind of sour on the screenplay is surprising.
But why do you need to relate to them on your terms? Why can't you accept that? This is not. I don't want to see
in my terms.
Story. Yeah, I'm saying, like, why do you have to? Why does this have to be a story about two people in situations you can recognize? Why can't it be? This is a story about.
I'm not saying it has to be one way or another. I'm talking about what I'm seeing on screen. I'm not saying it has to be something. I'm saying what it is was enjoyable to me because this is the direction they decide to go instead of making this character specifically individual, and they're going to be relatable to everybody in some
capacity. That's fair. Let me change my tack then and say it wasn't frustrating for you that you – I don't know how to phrase this – that you were seeing such familiar characters in an environment in a film that had the potential to – that it was and was clearly able to realize this potential, maybe based upon my, you know, familiarity with what Alfonso Cuarón has done in the past. I love Children of Men and sort of the technological opportunity here. You weren't frustrated by how basic and rudimentary.
Right. Well, the reason I think it has to be basic is because of the story value that I got out of it, which is very much about this collision of spirituality and science – and how everyone kind of makes a decision on that at some point in their lives. And we can kind of all identify with Sandra Bullock's character, who is grappling with the loss of a very important person in her life that keeps coming back to haunt her, and how George Clooney's character plays into that, and about her connecting with spirituality while being a scientist. And for me, I think that character needs to be universal. We all need to be able to identify her. So it's not that I need her to be that. It's that I think Cuarón and his son want someone that everyone can connect to so that we can all relate to the decision she has to make late in the game when the movie becomes more than just escaping shards of satellites that are being flung at her at 1,000 miles per hour, and suddenly becomes a decision of, should I live? Should I push myself to an extreme because of forces that I don't understand, or should I just die because it doesn't really matter? I mean, I'm a science person, and I don't see anything beyond life.
At the risk of spoiling things, can you talk about at what point in the story or what elements of the story invoked that conversation between, faith and rationality?
I'm not sure.
For me, the story was it didn't go to that, you know.
Sure.
It was more about
give Dave and Katie final moments, and I'll wave a spoiler flag and get into this for a second. Dave.
Right. Okay. Dave.
Picking up directly out of that, I guess the reason that I'm not saying that it's a good script, but the reason it doesn't bother me is because I read it like a year and a half ago, and I like
as all people will have.
Well, I mean, it was out there available on the internet.
Definitely the way you want to experience this movie, I might add. People say IMAX, but I say read it.
The point is, I offered at some point to Katie, I don't know if it was on show or off show, and I tried to say, like, this isn't really going to matter if you've read this or not, because that's not what this movie's about. This movie is about making you feel and see these things that didn't work for David, but that's why it didn't work for David, is because the core premise of like Alfonso Cuarón playing around in space like didn't abide by certain rules, both for me and David. I didn't mind the score so much because you gotta raise
the praise for the score is
Brahm.
I mean, even if the score didn't bother you, did you like actively enjoy the score on its own, or did you think that it was just sort of curtains?
It was there, but I would be unable to recall anything that wasn't used just as like a percussionary moment.
It's quieter moments. Steve Price's score in Gravity, its quieter moments are better than its loud, booming moments, which it often turns to, unfortunately. But I think the movie plays by the rules that you're saying it does, or doesn't, David. I do think it gets quiet when it goes to space, and when you can hear sound inside the space stations, that's proper. So
yeah, your argument about the sound design.
No, I'm not saying it breaks those rules. I'm just saying that its overall philosophy, the sound, is not respectful of, which is not to say it's disrespectful, but it's not faithful to what your experience would actually be in space. It doesn't create that verisimilitude, and that's fine choice. It's completely valid. I'm just saying that I think it's ineffective. I think it would have been, you know, a lot stronger for me as a purely physical experience if it went sort of the more Stanley Kubrick route.
Katie, in terms of putting patches and him enjoying this for the story to the side, are we 3 points on a spectrum in terms of just working of seeing a thriller in space?
We're Orion's belt.
I mean, I think what David is talking about is basically you've got this incredible setting, you've got these visuals you've never seen before, make something inventive. But I think this is the movie that Cuarón made. He made a straightforward thriller with straightforward characters because he knew he didn't want to spend time developing characters who are that different from what we usually see. So he made them, you know, relatively stock. I mean, it's something that my boy James Cameron does all the time where he gets people with like familiar beats and then puts them into something wild that you've never seen before.
Yeah, and they have to get their real legs.
It's unfortunate that my argument, I've made my argument sound like I'm upset because it's not the movie I wanted it to be. And I think that is misconstrued sort of, and I did this to myself, my experience with it, which is that I was just hoping that it would be a good movie. And I, you know, didn't really see any of the trailers or anything like that. I didn't really know what to expect. And it wasn't a movie that worked for me ultimately. And so I just sort of backtracked to figure out why. But I think, you know, we'll talk in the spoiler section about the things that really let it down, let the air out of the bag. But I think that all of these things that we've discussed really just added up to an experience that couldn't hold water for me. I wasn't feeling that tension that seems to have gripped everybody else. And once that releases its hold on you, all these other things are ripe for the picking. And you can really, dissect why the experience isn't working.
If you do not enjoy the first 20 minutes of Gravity, you're not going to enjoy the following hour of it.
I did. It just didn't feel... and again, like, I give this movie a pass. My harshness is really only in relative to, I would say, not in this crowd, but just in general, sort of premeditated, you know, orgiastic praise for this movie. But I think that it's just not anything special, and it could have been special.
I want Dave to finish wrapping up his thoughts, since I think it was still his turn.
Oh, Dave. You want me?
Yeah, because I felt like David and I both interrupted you.
Oh, not really. I could just continue on. Does Gravity really have story gravity? Stay tuned after this course.
Tell us about why God got involved in Gravity in this here spoiler session.
Yeah, why is it good enough for every movie but not the TV show when I said it was last week?
I didn't see it in Breaking Bad. I'm sorry. I see it everywhere else, including Soul Surfer. Why is this a movie about God? I was shocked, actually. I really didn't think, especially considering that most of the word out of TIFF kind of told me it's just a thriller, as if that's some sort of damning comment. But for me, this movie became something more. I mean, we start seeing it teased when we learn what Sandra Bullock is dealing with. She's not just a scientist on a mission being thrown around by clutter. But she's also
a person who has had life experience. Who would have guessed?
Yeah. Well, you were checked out of the movie by this moment.
I was not.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember this.
20 minutes in, you know, they're talking about how she lost her daughter.
Wait, was it after the title card in the beginning?
Brom. she has this tender moment about talking about her daughter and how she lost her, and this is why, you know, she drives around in the car listening to music. For me, these scenes are not that clunky. They're just tender storytelling moments in between. You know, this is when I get to take a deep breath, but it's also when I get to better identify with this person. Okay.
I'm okay with those scenes.
And it is a broad stroke. I'm not saying that killing off the daughter is not a tactic. It is, but it's something that's so broad and so familiar loss of a life that, again, this is a universal character and we all need to identify her. We're all on board with this. And as that loss continues to seep into her experience of escaping destruction, this movie becomes more about her inability to shake her thoughts on spirituality and the afterlife. And clearly she's struggling, well, because she at some point she wants to kill herself. She doesn't think there's really anything left. And she also doesn't think that she'll ever see her daughter again. She's given up on life. And even though she doesn't necessarily
think there's... She's not killing herself because she's depressed. She's killing herself because she thinks there's no escaping from this space prison.
Right, but she doesn't think that she'll see her daughter. This is like giving up on life, not crossing over into something more. And the scene with George Clooney, where George Clooney returns in this kind of hallucination, I don't think that she believes that she has seen an afterlife necessarily, that she's seen a spirit. I think she's just instilled by the idea that this highly scientific experience she's having, where everything has an answer, every problem has a solution if you can figure out the science to solve it, also has spirituality and an emphasis on risk and blind trust and belief. It's all about belief. And how can that really collide with science? And perhaps there are other forces at work, but the only way you're going to discover them is if you take a chance. So by her giving up, she is abandoning all belief. But luckily, by seeing George Clooney's quote-unquote spirit hallucination, she can believe that her daughter is still out there in some capacity. She can have a drive. And still, science is the answer. So that's how she takes off. And, of course, she lands back on Earth. God has given her to the Earth. And she emerges from the water in the scene that made David laugh out loud. Yeah. And man has emerged, is evolving out of the water to be their own person, to be an empowered human being. And perhaps... creationism plays into that, but in the end it is also evolution, and it is also about being a human being. Thank you, good night.
I'm surprised that hasn't changed at all since you first said it.
Since everyone you mentioned it to has said you're crazy.
Well, it's now a one-man show that I'm performing
now
on Broadway.
Listen, as the editor of a website who is desperate for interesting content, I inherently support Patch's idea.
I'll probably have to write that as an essay on film.com.
In fact, Patch's literally just start right now. But I will be most eager to read this piece because I would like to see this written out in a convincing fashion, because as of now, I'm not really sure that the text supports that. And even if the text were to support that, I'm not sure that it is an especially nuanced or compelling version of that conversation between faith and reality, whatever you want to paint the two sides as. I saw it more as an even more staid story about, you know, someone choosing life, you know, and it's like, you know, oh, I have more life to live. I'll see it's what my daughter would want. I'll see her eventually. I'm forgiving myself. It was like an Idiot's Guide to Breaking Bad almost, except for without all the evil shit. It was like, you know, reducing all of the war with himself into like a single moment. And I think that like the thing for me is when you have so little time to play, when you have such little energy in your script, such little nuance to devote to that conversation, why even bother having that conversation in the first place? Why even bother trying to make this wooden character when you can do something else with it and express the character through action? I mean, I think of a film like Run Lola Run, for example, which is so predicated on action and kinetic movement. And you don't really know anything about the character beyond what you learn through her running around, the fates. I mean, it sort of becomes more about the you know, universes and the various people she runs into than it does her particular character and her father cheating on her mom and et cetera. But that's all the action you need to support the action that you're seeing. That's all the character you need to support the action you're seeing on screen. And I think Gravity would have worked a lot better had it not troubled with that and not set itself up for that hilarious last shot, which is not hilarious by virtue of its content so much as it is its presentation from that super low angle.
Come on, it kicked ass. That's awesome. She made it back to Earth. That's empowering.
In terms of a question, how do you square your reading of the film with the fetal shot where she gets in the space station? Well, because I could see like a whole rebirth, death rebirth thing.
Yeah, she's being conceived in heaven. I actually kind of believe that. As silly as that statement.
There's the star child.
I mean, this is about spiritual understanding and delivering humans as spiritual figures back to Earth. So in what you're saying, Dave, this could actually play. I want to revisit this film, and I plan to in IMAX. But I do believe that this is about godly forces putting someone through the test, putting man through the test to have spiritual and scientific understanding, putting them on Earth and saying, look, creationism and evolution live as one. Go off, humans.
How would you have read the film differently if – because I was sort of lost as far as like where I was in the movie because of how absorbed I was at times sure. in the early going. And there's a scene where she hears – there's a really beautiful scene where she is trying to communicate with somebody, a Chinese person over the radio. And she thinks for a moment that she can hear him or he can hear her. And we learn that he can't. And I thought for a heartbreaking second that the movie was going to end there because I didn't realize that we were only about an hour and 5 minutes in. And I was disappointed that it didn't.
Yeah, we still had to ride around on a fire extinguisher.
Right. Oh, God, that was so silly and video gamey. I mean, that's literally something that has happened in video games several times.
And in Wall-E.
And maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It's not video. I think it's the Wall-E reference. And the spacesuit that I'm sure was very, very real that George Clooney flies around in. I'm sure that's scientifically accurate and whatnot also does not translate
well. I think they have that, actually.
I'm saying that they do. I don't think that they would invent that for this movie given the accuracy they were striving for. I just don't think it translates into film very well. It does look a little video gamey. Anyway, I wonder, Patches, how do you think you would have read the film had it actually ended there?
I don't think it would have made that much sense. So I would have been really confused. Well, I mean,
like if it ended on that moment of despair, that lack of communication, that idea that could hear the communication from beyond, or in this case from Earth, but could not, despite the emotion welling up inside of her and everything that she was finally prepared to say, she was finally desperate to communicate with this person, could not actually do that.
I mean, I think that's just a dark take. I mean, if you can't communicate with any human, if you have no connection to spirituality, then it's nihilistic. That would be a nihilistic ending to the film, that there's no communication. No matter how far you strive, the forces of God will keep you down, or the forces that don't exist will keep you down, fate, nature. I think that would be a really nihilistic way of winding down, because I like that she makes communication with someone, that you have to be reaching out, you have to be open to these ideas. But in some ways, even when you can't make communication with anyone, is there someone else in your life? There can be if you have belief.
Well, there's something about loneliness in this film and how everyone is so, you know, by virtue of being in space where life is impossible and they're all in their individual environments in their suits and they're next to each other, but they can't touch, they can't breathe the same air critically, and they can only help each other so far. There's that very palpable sense of loneliness, and there was something to me about her being up there, the loneliest person, I was going to say on Earth, but we know that's not true, the loneliest person in the galaxy, and she had this moment where she actually, I felt for maybe the first time since her daughter's death, had a moment of genuine human communication, even if it was only through airwaves, you know, in a different atmosphere. That was moving for me and in a way satisfied what I wanted out of the character in a way that was more relatable for me than her superhuman, completely ridiculous Wall-E, you know, ride.
Yeah, but that moment needs to happen to show that she has bounced back, that she's embraced the fact that even when you are the loneliest person in the galaxy, do you have someone there? You do. Maybe because you believe in the afterlife or spirituality or something like that. But more importantly, you believe in yourself. You're never alone as long as you have a belief to go on and you have something worth living for. And I think that's important. We can all have that if we have something that doesn't need to be near us to grasp and hold on to at all times. And she's empowered by that. So she has to bust out of this thing with a fire extinguisher like Wall-E.
Well, like George Michael said, you've got to have faith.
That's true. He did say that. 'Cause I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. Because I got to go for faith. I got to have faith, the faith, the faith. Baby, I know you're asking me to stay. Hey, Patrick. Masters, what was this week's lightning round question?
Me? Dave's on the show. Oh, right.
It's always your job.
In honor of Gravity, what is your favorite opening scene from a movie? A big, bold lightning round question.
Well, let's make Dave talk first, just because.
I'm going to go with Twitter user IamChoppa, who said Raising Arizona, which is great and might be my first memory of liking Nick Cage in something.
What is the opening scene of that movie?
It's a very long one where they kind of narrate their entire courtship from
Right.
Which involves a lot of robbery.
The lineup pictures.
It's nice.
Yeah, exactly. Step to the right.
Oh shit, I should have picked Usual Suspects. Alright, never mind. Too late.
David?
I'm gonna go with Tom Nix. The Tom Nix. Who says, once upon a time in the West. That's all he said, and that's really all he needs to say, because the opening of that movie is just fucking brilliant. And I love the movie that follows, but it just peaks so hard in those first 12 minutes.
I think that was an inspiration for Breaking Bad, if I recall.
I'm sure it was.
All about Breaking Bad.
I am going to go with @Parabasis, who said The Conversation, which I believe is a wonderful long zoom shot into some San Francisco destination. I can't remember which.
Some
but
kind of public park.
Man, that continues to be tense for me in a way that Gravity almost is.
I'm going with Dan Schindel, who said one of mine is Inglourious Basterds, which it's a great opening scene. And I went into that movie a skeptic since I had never really been totally dazzled by Tarantino before. And that was kind of my first moment of selling myself on this movie that I then went on to love pretty hard from there.
It was also one of the first moments you sold yourself
for Tarantino
for sex.
Yeah.
Wow, this took a dark turn, just like that scene in Inglourious Basterds, actually.
Unpaid prostitute.
With that reference to a random SNL sketch, we'll wrap up today's Operation Kino. We'll be back next week with the main episode and a review and no more TV talk for a while, so I hope you enjoyed that on Tuesday.
Yeah, because TV is dead, so there's nothing
TV
to talk about.
Is dead until Mad Men returns.
Oh, can't wait.
In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I am Matt Patches. I write on the internet, and you can find all of my work at mattpatches.com. Apparently, I'll be writing something for film.com about my crazy gravity theory, so you can look for it at film.com.
Look for it on Monday, October 7th.
You guys, exclusive. You heard
weekend
it here.
Weekend plans, yeah.
This is how we do. I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior editor of film.com. And you can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich at film.com. And at film.com, we'll be posting all sorts of things about Gravity that I didn't write. So don't be afraid to come by and read them.
I'm Dave Gonzalez for the first part DA7E. I'm writing about superhero movie news at latino-degree.com. Superhero movie news, perhaps. It depends on who your choice family member is.
I'm trying to think of what superhero would have a fake nose and a. All I can think of is Steve Carell in that Foxcatcher trailer. Anyway.
Well, you're maybe just a big fan of Tom Hiddleston's nose. And if you are, come to latino-review.com and maybe I'll have something for you.
Is it fake?
Probably not, though. No, I don't have any scoops on the nose. I'm sorry about this whole joke.
I'm Katie Rich. You can find me here at Cinema Blend or on Twitter at Katie Rich, K-A-T-E-Y-R-A-C-H. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.